Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to episode number 288 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is September 30th, 2013. A big show for you this week on the podcast. Of course, the big news, USC firing head coach Lane Kiffin after a 3-2 start, losing 7 of the last 11 games. So we're going to talk to Dan Weber later on the show and Coach Harvey Hyde all about what that means for the USC program going forward. If you have any questions or comments, drop us an email, podcast@uscfootball.com, or you can call 206-888-6755 or go to peristylepodcast.com and leave a voicemail right on the page there. Without further ado, wanted to talk to the coach, Harvey Hyde. Wow, coach, a crazy couple of days.
It has been a crazy couple of days. And, Ryan, before we get started, I want to, of course, thank Southern California Ticket Service for the sponsorship of our show. You know, they have been loyal to the USCFootball.com podcast. They've sponsored it, and I want to thank Curtis over there that does this for us. And I don't have the number with me. I just know his local number by heart.
Yeah, I know, but it's Southern California Tickets, sctickets.com, 1-800-888-7287.
And then I want to get I want to get all the commercial stuff done first. And my Twitter is at Coach Harvey Hyde. So if you want to follow me, we'll get that out there too. And if you want to get yours out there, get that out there too.
Yeah, and it's so at Coach Harvey Hyde for the coach. I'm at Inside Troy, and we've been tweeting quite a bit. I was at the press conference tweeting, and there's been a lot of happy people, Coach. And Coach, maybe I play this statement for you real quick, and this kind of sums up the way that a lot of USC fans are feeling right now.
Hi, this is Al from Pennsylvania. I love this show, and I would just like to say, ding dong, that clown is gone. Happy days, fight on.
So, not the nicest statement, but a lot of people are saying stuff like that, Coach. I think, what did you think about this, how this all went down?
Well, let me put it to you this way, Ryan. I never advocate the firing of anybody because it's a very difficult situation for a program, its fans, the football players that were recruited there for and wanted to play for Coach Kiffin. The whole thing is a very difficult situation. His family, his kids, the future of his career, also USC and where they're headed. So I just wanted to get that out there. And you know, there's timing for everything, you know, and I think there's times where it's just time that when you think someone is out there in the middle of the ocean and can't find the land and he doesn't know what to do, and you throw him a rope and you say, come aboard. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if he's relieved. Not that he didn't campaign to keep his job. But can you imagine the stress he's been going through? Can you imagine all the criticism? I don't even know who his friends are, where he goes out. He's a very secretive type of person. And he had difficulties with just about everything since he arrived at USC, the media, parents, the fans, sometimes players, a little of everything. And I think it just all boiled to a pot at the top where Pat Hayden said, you know, it's better for everybody. It's better for Lane. It's better for the USC football program, the players, the entire university to make a change. I did a 4-hour radio show yesterday on ESPN in LA.
Wow.
And I never had one caller call and say, Coach, they did the wrong thing. I had most of them call. Some were excited, like our caller just was. Some are just saying, what's going to happen now? But I think it's a relief to everyone. I think it was time for a change, and I hate to say that being a former coach, you hate to see anyone lose their get their job, but it affects everybody, the coaches on the staff. Will they be retained? Do they start looking for a job right away? What happens to the recruits out there that were already verbally committed? Are they still going to stay verbally committed? When are they going to name who the new football coach? Who's the new football coach going to be? These are all distractions to the program now. So there's additional distractions that now have come about since Coach Kiffin has been relieved of his duty. So it's a difficult situation, but yet it had to be done for a couple of reasons. First of all, I think in a way he had lost the team. I didn't know what was going on in staff meetings, but there really was an identity. What would have happened Thursday if they came back into the Coliseum? What type of greeting would those kids have had and Coach Kiffin had with recruits there on a national TV audience? It would have been ugly. So you try to, you know, write it out of the script. And you continue to move forward with Coach Ed Orgeron, which I think is a tremendous leader, and he'll be evaluated. I think he's a strong candidate. You could do worse as far as a head football coach. At least he's aware of the situation, the players like him, and all this and that. So I think right now they've taken a step forward to correct or put a bandage on the bleeding. And you've also taken the gun out of Coach Kiffin's mouth. And he can now kick back. They owe him a lot of money. He can regroup his life, decide what he wants to be and do, and move forward. He has a wonderful family. It happens to a coach. If you stay in coaching long enough, it's going to happen to you. Unfortunately, it happened to him at Oakland in Tennessee. It wasn't a – I don't think he can go back in that state.
No.
And in Southern California, it happened, unfortunately, there. And when you look at these three positions, you say, yes, he was a great recruiter at USC. Now, I'm going to give him that credit. But look what he was recruiting to. USC. Is it hard to recruit to USC? I don't know. I would like to see him or some other people recruit at Akron or UNLV or some of these other schools. So you've got to be able to find someone who has done it somewhere where it wasn't supposed to happen and has worked his way up with him and his staff to a position where if he could be successful at one of those universities, look what he might be able to do at USC. So it's all part of now Pat Hayden's responsibility to go out there and find who that person is. Just because necessarily that person has a big name in other areas of life and other coaching positions, that doesn't mean that he can get it done at SC. Until you've sat in the head coaching position's desk and office, you don't know what it's all about. Great offensive offensive coordinators, that didn't mean he's going to be a great head football coach. So right now, I think everyone is relieved. The fans are relieved. The university is relieved from all the practice, the pressure. Practices are going to open up again to the media, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it opens up again to the public. Things are going to try to get restored. Coach Ed Orgeron is a very outgoing person, exactly an opposite from Lane Kiffin, not that he didn't have his way. And as I said it yesterday, one thing that Lane Kiffin did, right or wrong, how we feel about it, he did it his way. And we don't have to agree with it, but he did it his way, whether he was successful or he went out with his way. Sure. But it's something that happened, and it's very unfortunate for him. But I think, there's a lot of divorces in life, and this is one.
That was kind of a discouraging voicemail. Here's a more encouraging email from Luke. And he said, I just watched how everyone on the USC football team thanked Lane Kiffin, starting with Pat Hayden and Ed Orgeron and Marcus Martin and Devon Kennard. He really appreciates how Ed was grateful for what Lane did for him. He was also impressed that Pat Hayden said so many nice things about Lane Kiffin. So Luke's happy that the way it went down, no one was really saying bad things about Lane on his way out.
Are you going to play it? Is that what?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It wasn't a voice. No, it wasn't a voicemail. Just a regular email question on that one. Sorry about
well,
that.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. It was a very smooth transition. People tried to make a little bit of a controversy on how it was done and where it was done and all this and that. But when you let someone go, I'd rather know as a coach before I went home where I stood rather than stay up all night and wonder what the firing squad is going to be like in the morning. I'd rather be told on the way home, go home to my family, let the team go back, and know it the way they did it. And I don't think that was unprofessional. A lot of people thought that was unprofessional, the big headlines in the airport. Where are you going to do it if you're in the airport? You're going to drive to the hotel and do it or go back to campus and do it? It's going to happen. So you got to do it. You didn't do it in front of the team. You did it in private. And it happened that way. So I think everyone did it the right way. It was smooth. I think you should always thank someone for their services. And you feel sorry for Coach Kiffin, but again, you don't feel sorry for Coach Kiffin because he's had great experiences in college and professional coaching at 38 years old. People live their whole life and work their whole life to be an assistant coach, maybe at a university like USC. And he's made big money. So he just happened to do it at a young age. Was he ready to be the head coach at USC? I don't know. But he was, and he had that opportunity. So now everybody's hugging and kissing goodbye. Why burn bridges? And you move on.
Stephen Poway actually wrote us before the Arizona State game, just came in late from the podcast last week. But he sent it to me again because we didn't get to read his question. And he was talking about if only Lane Kiffin would listen to the podcast, you know, maybe he would be able to survive the season. And then he went on to say this. So this was, you know, before it was about a week ago. He says, as it is, I give Kiffin one or two more games at the most because Hayden is forced to promote Ed Orgeron as interim head coach. Yes, I'm calling it here. Orgeron coached Mississippi, has demonstrated he has what it takes to lead the defensive line. So why not let him be interim head coach for the season? So Steve wanted to let us know that a week ago when he saw this one coming and he nailed it.
Well, yeah, it's been talked about, and he did nail it. I think everyone had that suspicion of when they were going to pull the trigger. It depended a lot on every performance. People made fun of me because of my pregame statement when I said it's death march in the desert. There'll only be one survivor and only enough water for one team. It was. Because when you go there, you had to win that football game. No matter what you thought or people, oh, you got to play well or look good, you had to win that game. You couldn't be 0-2 in last place. Last place, which currently USC is in the Pac-12 Southern Division. You're fighting now an uphill battle. And that's not USC. USC plays for the Rose Bowl and the National Championship. They don't play for the Sun Bowl. They don't play for the Emerald Bowl or whatever it's called. They don't play for the Holiday Bowl. Fans are only satisfied if they go to the Rose Bowl, and that's why they recruit at that level, and that's why they get recruits that come to USC, because they have the opportunity of playing on a great team in a great stadium with a great tradition. They come to SC to play in the Rose Bowl or the National Championship game. And when you're not headed in that direction, it's not working. Because I've said it 100 times, and I'll say it again, you can talk about academics, which SC has. You can talk about compliance, which SC has. You can talk about all of that. But the backbone of the alumni, the student body, and everything is the football program at USC. People wear the colors with pride everywhere. Currently, right now, they're afraid to put their cardinal and gold on. They might start putting it on again. They started to rebel as far as not attending the games. They started to rebel by booing. And when you think about booing Fire Kiffin, when recruits are on the sideline, wow. That is, I don't know what you call it. That is horrible.
Yeah.
So it had to stop. And I think the timing was good. You have a period of longer than a normal week to regroup. and you move on. And you know, Coach Kiffin's not the first coach to be fired.
No.
Anywhere in the country. You rebound. Now he starts, like I said, it's time for me to start talking about what I've been preaching about. It's time to get up and continue. The play's not over. And when I was relieved of my duty, it was because when Tarkanian and I were both relieved of our duty because we won too much. And when we were relieved, I just stood right in front of my kids and cried and told them, I'm sorry I let them down because I brought them to UNLV and they're probably there because of me, but they got to continue. And I'm going to practice what I've been telling you to do. I'm going to play till the final play is over. And I marched away. So, you know, that's what he should do too. Don't go hide. Don't go out to dinner. Be yourself. Be proud in what you did because you did it your way. And if people get on your butt about it, that's the way it is. People should leave you alone and respect you. Go ahead.
All right. Well, we wanted to talk, obviously a lot of talk about the coaching change, but maybe one of the more disturbing aspects of that game was how the defense played. And we had a question on that. I know Clancy Pendergast got a lot of praise the way the defense played the first four games, but it's kind of changed, obviously, this last game. But let me play this question for you.
JD from DC calling in. This is a question appropriate for Coach Hyde and Dan Weber. In the midst of all this brouhaha over the Kiffin firm, it seems to me Clancy Pendergast has escaped a lot of well-deserved scrutiny. I think we saw a quarterback who had the receivers and the ability to exploit Pendergast's lopsided over-reliance upon the blitz. Our defense is really exposed after looking very good against some weak teams. We're going to be playing plenty of quarterbacks who can burn us badly and make us pay for this one-horse pony, I think. Looking forward to the rest of the schedule, how do you see him adjusting? I did not see any of that in the second half. And it seems to me this is somewhat reminiscent of his experience at Cal, where he started out hot and then faded.
Well, you know, I have to agree with you. If before the game, and I've said this before yesterday, and I'll say it again, and I don't want to repeat myself if you listened yesterday, if you thought before the game USC would score 41 points, have over 500 yards in total offense on the road, you would have bet right now they'd have won that football game. Now, all of the points aren't the fault of the defense because they had a lot of turnovers, four turnovers, one pick that ran back for a touchdown. But the consistency of the defense wasn't there. And what Arizona State did was have a great game plan. They stretched the field. When you like to blitz a lot, that means the strength of your defense is where? In the middle of the field. You're going after someone that you know where he is. But against Arizona State, you didn't know where they were going to be. They ran two swing screens down on the goal line for touchdowns because they outmanned you. You were going one way and they were going the other way. They ran motion sweeps, which meant if you were coming up the middle, the ball was already handed off and the guy was going wide to the outside, which they did. They made a big gain and scored a touchdown on another one. And let's don't take away the credit of Kelly's passing. His accuracy was absolutely amazing. The passes were right there. So let's give Arizona State credit as far as having a great game plan for USC. And, of course, they had seen that defense before. They knew how to attack that defense. So it wasn't the first time they've gone against that type of defense, and they were prepared for it. Now, the adjustments on the defensive side of the football, I think, were not made that were necessary to stop what they were trying to do. You weren't getting to Kelly. His release was very fast, if you noticed. Their running backs are as good as receivers as they are running backs. What puzzled me was how they were confused on their lining up in the secondary. Foster caught a pass down the middle with no safety help whatsoever. It was embarrassing. It was a Pop Warner coverage. just ran right on by everybody, threw him the ball, and he got a touchdown that fast. So there's a lot of things like that that I wonder as far as the preparation is concerned. You can't play it that way. So we'll wait and see, because he's going to see a lot of those type of offenses now, except for Stanford. They're going to want to line up and pound you. But I think, Kern, and I believe this when I tell you this, ladies and gentlemen, I believe SC can beat Arizona. I believe they can beat Notre Dame. I believe that they can beat who they have. Oregon State's going to be a tussle for them. That's going to be a tough one up there on a Friday night. Cal is going to throw the ball all over the field, but they should be able to ball control Cal. They are running the football well. And Stanford's going to be a real tough game. UCLA, well, that's a rivalry game. That's a one-game season. We'll see what happens with that. Colorado, please, let's beat them.
Utah,
got to beat them. So it's not over with the season. And I think if you improve the offense to where it's effective, and I'm sorry to ramble on, but I want to tell you what I'm thinking. You can be very successful on offense. Okay, the receivers are banged up. Okay, so what do? Something you might have done from the beginning. You get your athletes on the field. Now, I'm not trying to tell Clay Helton what to do. I'm telling him what I would do. And I would get both tight ends on the field at all time, like Stanford did last year with their tight ends. And I would utilize them for mismatches in the secondary, in slot formations, wide slits, wing sets, double tight sets. And I'd run a two-back offense. Nothing against the fullbacks that are playing now. But why would you have Davis on the bench? Why wouldn't you have Madden and Davis in the game at the same time and run the ball and pass the ball to both of those exciting players? Have your playmakers on the field, not watching the game. And you still have a great receiver in Aguilar. Blackwell's good. And you get by with that, because you can put one of those backs in the slot and still have a passing formation. But utilize a two-back offense, get your athletes on the field, and you still have Buck Allen. And all that does is help Cody Kessler when you have great players surrounding him and the offensive line. I'm sorry I rambled on it.
No, that's okay. Well, I mean, we have questions about that, too, like Troy 75. Ed Orgeron announced that Clay Helton would be the offensive coordinator. He was going to be the guy calling the plays. Ed Orgeron, during the press conference, said that, you know, the offense is going to look pretty similar to what you've seen before. But Troy 75 wanted to know if you thought the offense would change that much, and I think you got in a little bit of that. And if do you know anything about Clay Helton when he called plays at Memphis?
No, I don't know anything about Clay Helton calling his plays, but you don't need to change the offense a lot. You just need to put some things into it and stay simple. I've always said, and you know I have, SC had too much offense.
Yeah.
They ran a little bit of everything. I didn't know what identity it has. I kept saying all the time, and you people know this, what offense are they running? I don't know. Could never tell. One week it was one thing, the next week it was something else. So you take what you have in the playbook, which is probably 50 pounds, and I'm just being sarcastic,
right?
Okay, which I shouldn't be on a day like this.
That's okay.
But you take it and you narrow it down, and you put your athletes in a position where you don't get delay of games, where you don't have illegal procedures, where you don't have people offsides or lining up on the wrong side and you're having to wave people, get over here, get over there. You make your play calling really short so people understand what you're going to do. You speed up the game a little bit. You don't take all day, but you don't have all day. And you play football. And what you do is take the eye and you add to the eye formation. You add to it fullback action. Runs to the fullback. Dives, belly action with the fullback off the toss. You move your backs up much closer and you run the toss. I don't know how many people saw the LSU game and Georgia game, but they're running the same type of offense. Move them up and take advantage of your running backs. I don't think their running backs are any better than USC's running backs or their quarterbacks. If you have the run inserted in your offense, then you can do a lot of things with the passing game. and you pound them, and you got to have an outside game. There is no outside game at all. But Cody Kessler's not your outside game. I mean, nothing against Cody, but he just, God didn't give him the speed these other guys have. So why not let Madden and why not Davis do that for you? Just have Cody go down the line and just toss the ball to one of these guys. Lead options, it's called. Fullback leads, cuts the first pressure, safety, the back breaks on that. I mean, little simple things. You don't want him to carry the ball. You want him to stretch the defense, so that the defense just can't gang up on your backs in the middle. So it's little simple things you got to do to improve your chances to be successful.
You talked about the identity, Coach. Do you think the simplicity factor is real? I know Dan Weber feels this way. It did seem like at times that Cody Kessler and the receivers, and it just, they weren't able to get plays off early in the play clock. It's not a team that was really built to go quickly. You know, you're talking late third, early fourth quarter. There wasn't really a sense of urgency. It seemed like they were so deliberate. And that was just the way that this team plays, and part of it being the complexity of what's there on offense. I'm curious, and we're going to have to ask Clay Helton about this when they get back to practice on Wednesday this week. Can they simplify things? Do you think that's something that they can do, take the current playbook, try to simplify things, shorten it up a little bit, and let Clay Helton call the plays? Is that possible in the coaching world?
Certainly it is. It's these are intelligent kids. These kids have played football their entire life. You could ask them, well, how do you want to call this play? And they'd tell you. These kids are smart. Coaches are smart. You can't have players thinking before the snap of the ball. You've got to have them ready for the snap of the ball. And this is part of when you have great athletes, you don't mess them up. You polish them up. And you have them ready to, you know, get out there and make headlines. And I think they've been confused the whole time. When you have receivers next to each other, I hope that route wasn't called, but you're not, you know, or designed that way. But you see so many times two receivers next to each other. That's not stretching the secondary. You have the middle of the field that you never utilize, which are great players, tight ends, posts, different slants, different things that you want to use where you make the defensive back feel like, oh, my gosh, what am I going to cover now? You run comeback routes when they have the fly. So he turns to run, you stop, come back to the football, throw to a spot. You have all kinds of different things that you do that are simple off of routes. They're all correlated. They all go together so that it makes it simple for kids to understand why you're doing something. Why, if they do this, we're going to do that. We're not just going to call a play to call a play. And I think that's the number one thing that, you know, kids have to understand. Because, you know, kids can call a game. They understand it when it's simple. They know more than anybody. When they come off the field, I used to ask them, what do you have in there? What do you see going on? What do you think will work? I used to grab Randall Cunningham and say, Randall, tell me, did you see the backside post on that? He was wide open. He said, yeah, coach, I'll hit him next time. Or if it was third down and two, he'd come over to me. We'd stand there, and I'd say the first thing, well, what do you think? He says, coach, that backside slant, they're not expecting that. I'm going to roll to the right, and I'm going to throw back. I said, you sure? And he says, I'm sure. I said, well, if it's not there, look for the out. Look for the out on your side. He says, okay, well, what do you think the chances are that play is going to be successful, Ryan?
Pretty high,
pretty good.
Right? Yeah. He
you know
knows
why?
What he's doing.
He suggested it.
Yeah.
And if he comes off, I'm going to say, what happened? And he understands it then. So it's being a team. It's not being a dictator. Dictatorship works good, but that's not always the best way of doing it with kids.
No. well, one last thing before we let you go, Coach. What do you think? Where do you think USC goes from here as far as like trying to hire a coach?
Well, I think they've already started doing this. I think they've had feelers out. You can't kid me. Not talking to coaches, but talking to agents. Maybe not Pat Hayden, but somebody. I know boosters know boosters and how that all works. Name surface. You know the same names I do. But again, if you're USC, and I said this yesterday, you go after anybody in the country. Would you rather live? Now, nothing about this. I'm not going to complain about the Midwest. These are all wonderful places, okay? Would you rather live in Manhattan Beach, Santa Monica, Beverly Hills, wherever you choose, California, okay? Newport Beach. I don't want to slight anybody. Or in some of these other areas. Now, I know it costs more to live here. But you get me. You get more pay here. And you have the opportunity of playing the best in a rich, full conference now and a traditional football program. There are no limitations on USC football as far as finances, as far as support, as far as anything. So if you're a coach out there, you've got to look at this as a great opportunity for you. I would look at it as an honor. I wouldn't even want to be paid. I'd say, pay me what you want. Because it's a chance to go to play or coach at a great university. I think it has to be a name that has an impact so that players out there immediately turn around and say, wow, I'm now interested in USC, because there's going to be decommits during this period of time. Because some players want to go to USC because of Lane Kiffin. But you want it to be a name, and I don't know if they've even talked to this guy, and I don't even know him personally. I'm just throwing a name out, John Gruden. Like if you said, John Gruden is at SC? Are you kidding me? He's an NFL maker. He's a quarterback maker. He's won a Super Bowl. Are you kidding me? He's at SC? I want to look at that program. Because of his TV exposure recently, he's huge. He's huge, and if he gets the right staff, he's not been in recruiting. But if he goes in the home, people will say, wow, I met John Gruden. They're not going to say, wow, I met Harvey Hyde. So I just think that if they can get a name like Kevin Sumlin, who coached Johnny Football, or somebody that's been successful out there that makes an impact to the parents, to the high school coaches, and to the athletes, you got a chance. And also, you better put a fence around California. Don't recruit nationally all the time unless you have to. There's great, talented coaches or players in Southern California, and you better hire some coaches that know Southern California. Not all your coaches from Alabama, Kansas, Oregon, not that Oregon doesn't recruit the Pac-12, but you better hire a few local coaches and great recruiters with reputations who can coach to be on your staff. Now, John Gruden's just one of them. I'm talking about others that are out there too, but we don't have time to discuss them. I just mean it's got to be an impact name.
Makes sense, Coach. All right. Well, we got months to speculate on who the next coach will be, so I'm sure we'll get into that a lot more. Thanks again for coming on the show. Great stuff, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Ryan, thank you very much, buddy, and take care, everyone. We'll be with you next week.
All right. Thanks to Southern California Tickets, and back with in 30 seconds with USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber.
Fight on, Trojan fans. We're all very excited about this season. My name is Louis Tange, and I'm the managing director of Circle Marketing. Like USC, Circle Marketing has a long track record of success. Ours hasn't been on the football field, though. We have been very successful in helping the small businesses of America get the kind of marketing strategy and support previously only affordable by large companies. For example, by going to CircleMarketing.com, you can view our portfolio, read our case studies, and see how we were able to increase business by 90%, grow social media followings by 10 times what it was when we started, and how our websites and marketing strategies have helped our small businesses sales reach and exceed all of their marketing goals time and time again. So come visit CircleMarketing.com today, read our case studies and testimonials, and see what we've done for other small businesses like yours. Then contact us and find out what we can do to help your small business too. Circle Marketing, the company that fights on for your small business.
We are back here on the Peristyle Podcast talking with USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber. Obviously, lots of stuff has been going on a little over 24 hours ago. Or I guess,
yeah.
I mean, crazy stuff. The one thing, Dan, is crazy. I tweeted this out. USC, in the beginning of the third quarter of the Arizona State game, marched down the field in two plays and took the lead. And since that point, it's been a whirlwind.
Yeah, you know, for those who thought, boy, if we only figured out what the deal is scoring in the third quarter, and here they come out looking like, you know, a Pete Carroll team. Like they'd figured it all out, comfortable, confident. Not sure we've ever seen anything like that. I mean, I kept thinking, this is like that, you know, none of us were there, but that Notre Dame game with Anthony Davis in the, you know, 55-24 turnaround game. I'm thinking, is this what it felt like for Notre Dame people? that was worse. But I've never seen anything like it. I don't think anybody else has. Pat Hayden and Max Nikias had, that's for sure.
Yeah.
it was, if they could have put a sign on the on their head. I mean, they're standing literally at the end of the bench, and when you watch them, you know, and then J.K. McKay would come walking by, and you thought, they're having that meeting, the meeting that is going to decide exactly what they're doing. They're having it right at the end of the bench in front of 64,000 and some people, and they were.
Yeah, we had a picture of it.
You couldn't take your eyes off of them. I mean, they were still talking. We didn't get down there, you know, till the 5-minute mark, and they're still talking.
We got the.
I mean,
we
it
got
was obvious. There it was, you know.
Yeah.
And there's some guy yelling it. God, you know, an Arizona State fan, but last minute or so of the game, he comes down to the fence, and it's only like 10 feet from the bench, and he's yelling at the USC players at the top of his lungs. How does it feel to be playing for the worst coach in college football? Just screaming at him.
Wow.
It was ugly.
We actually have a picture of those two guys talking. Tim Lutz did a nice job taking that picture, so we got to put it in your story. We tweeted it out, but it's funny. You can really see that they're engaged in some major conversation. Obviously, it turned out to be Lane Kiffin's gone.
It couldn't have been more obvious. I mean, it was as serious as it could possibly be, and you just never see that, you know, with the athletic director and the president of the university. And they're basically on the bench, and they're in front of everybody else, and it wasn't just, you know, a conversation about, you know, what the weather was like in Tempe. It was, you know, they give them credit. It had to be done. I mean, I'll be honest, I was telling people, once you know in your mind that Lane isn't the right answer going forward, I was telling people, you know, even if they won in Arizona State, I think they needed to do it for going forward. I think USC right now had to get the answer, had to get a path in the direction, an obvious path for everybody, you know, as soon as possible. This was not something that could wait till the end of the year. It wasn't going to get better. It was, you know, one of Lane's favorite lines. It is what it is. There wasn't any changing the direction of the program after, you know, to have a team so badly prepared that they score 7 points against Washington State at home, then a couple of weeks later and lose. And then a couple of weeks later, they score 41 points against a clearly much better Arizona State team on the road and lose. It just wasn't working, and it wasn't ever going to work. And it's time for everybody to get on with the rest of their lives, and that's what happened.
There's a lot of stuff we want to talk about with the coaching search, and there's questions on that. Like I said, we're not going to go through every single question we got. We're going to try to generalize these because there's just so much going on here. The big news, you know, being the coaching search and all of that. But we'll get to all that. But I guess a few thoughts on the game first, Dan. Maybe before we get into that, what you thought went on. You know, giving up 62 points, it tied for the USC record, the most points, you know, ever in the history of USC football that they've given up. You mentioned that they scored in the third quarter, but then it just kind of fell apart after that. Third downs were still a problem. Overall, what did you think about the game?
I think two things. One, Arizona State did a magnificent job of preparing that team. That was their third tough game in a row. And they got kind of a beat down themselves the week before at Stanford. To see the way they use guys, that they get the most out of Marion Grice, I mean, is a scoring machine. And so much of it is the things they do with him, the way they attack you when they get in the red zone and how they match him up, much more, stuff that USC's never thought about doing in terms of the way they execute all of the back shoulder throws that, how often do you see USC run those, back shoulder throws where even when the guy's covered, they complete them. I just thought their offensive line was unbelievably well prepared, to handle USC's defensive line. The quick throws, the way the way Taylor Kelly got rid of the ball. I just thought, okay, that's what a professional coaching staff and a professional approach to a college football game looks like. Tremendous job by them. And all I can think of for that defensive performance is sloppy and unfocused and the lack of ability to tackle. It looked like last year. And you do wonder, we're not in practice, but we're hearing much more about, the first teams don't go against one another anymore. No, it's almost all we go against the scout team. And you do wonder, and maybe for a guy like Clancy Pendergast, he wasn't here last year. And maybe he doesn't realize, once you start going into protective mode in practice, that's what happens.
Yeah.
And I know Clancy had talked about how you got to practice the way you play. But from talking to the kids and asking Lane a couple of different times, they're practicing differently now. And they've, you go down to 56, originally recruited scholarship players that you're taking to Arizona State, you have to say, and Lane said, you have to practice different. Well, if that's going to be the result, I don't think you can practice differently. You can't become, when Lane referenced that, okay, we've got an NFL roster in terms of numbers, but you can't practice like an NFL team. You don't have NFL players. You got, 20-year-olds, not 30-year-olds. And that's what it looked like to me. It looked like that the slowdown in practice really caught up with the defense on the worst possible night against an Arizona State team playing for its life. Now, the interesting thing is, for a half, USC almost looked like it was playing for its life. Still too many mistakes and what have you, but they were, executing, and then, boom, who's ever seen the defense, even the possibility that the defense would play like that. I also shared, USC's got a couple of pretty good young running backs, darn it. I mean, Justin Davis, the ability to go the distance against a decently athletic team, that surprised me. I mean, that was his 58-yarder taking it to the house. You would think USC can figure out going forward some ways to take advantage of that. They can't keep having the offensive breakdowns in the line. They've got to figure out something about that. That's just too many mistakes, And I mean, they get a sack right away. How do you go out there with a play that, this is on the script. It's right at the top of your script, and you can't execute it.
Yeah.
You can't do that. That that just negates, you know, any value of practice. I mean, you got to get those things right. And they have to be, and maybe if, you know, Arizona State did something different and USC wasn't ready for it, then there, maybe there's a complexity level. You know, with the way the running backs are running, maybe you have to become significantly simpler going forward. And just taking advantage of the talent that you have and trying to figure out a way to take out the complexity that obviously has to be there that causes those missed assignments, you know, on the offensive line. That has to stop. They can't be a good football team if they keep making mistakes on the offensive line. Can't be. It's not possible. It doesn't look like they've come up with any answers yet, and maybe that was kind of the part of the overall approach, the NFL-style approach for college kids. You know, I mean, how many teams do that well? Stanford does it really well. And Alabama, even though they're throwing the ball more, is kind of in that mold. USC isn't Stanford and Alabama. And they don't really recruit the same kind of players, and they sure as heck weren't able to coach them the same way. There's a discipline and a toughness with guys like Shaw and Nick Saban that just doesn't exist at USC and might not ever exist exactly that way. So I think USC has to find maybe a little bit different, you know, way and different approach to the offense.
Yeah, it makes sense. And one last thing on the defense, Dan. It looked like they exposed the middle of the USC defense, that it was it's attacking style. There's risk reward there. I thought maybe Chucky Keaton could have done a little bit more of the zone read that we got to see Taylor Kelly do and had a lot of success with. But I think a lot of the Arizona State offense too, when they were throwing those back throw to shows, I mean, it looked like they were completing passes where defenders were right there. It wasn't like these guys were wide open. There was some chance, you know, up the middle. Certainly the tight ends got loose up there, but so a lot of the passes to the sidelines and deeper down the field, they're back shoulder throws that seemed to be perfect execution by the offense and just kind of was like piling on. It was like just not the USC defense's day. They made some mistakes, but I think Arizona State played really well too.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, they just could not have been better prepared for USC. I mean, it was a pleasure to watch a team that well prepared. I mean, they got every bit out of their ability, every single bit. And then you'd go watch USC and you'd see, they'd run some pattern where all three guys are perfectly covered and no opportunity to throw the ball. And the discouragement level, this is one of the most negative things you saw all night is Cody is scrambling, and they've got three guys in two fairly deep pattern and a third, 15 yards, 18 yards downfield is a short guy. And Cody is running for his life, and not one of the three receivers came back to help him out. He basically just stood there and watched him until he finally had to run out of bounds. But nobody came back and tried to find an open spot, tried to find, you know, let Cody know, you know, you can hit me, you know, here, or I'm going there. They were really discouraged. If I were Cody, I'd be really discouraged too. I mean, I think he's playing really well. If you consider neither one of the interceptions was his fault, the one obviously that went through Marquise's hands that Cody thought he had a touchdown, probably the game turner around. Even though they did get a lead later on, I think that really would have changed things. The pick six was a mistake with the receivers, both who called the wrong look, and did the wrong thing. And Cody doesn't see that. I mean, it's a play where he doesn't get a chance to really read that safety who came over, but the guys who should have read it didn't and read it wrong. And that's another. The level of complexity shouldn't put your quarterback into that situation. I mean, Taylor Kelly wasn't in the situation where he's going to have to throw something that is going to get him in tremendous trouble if his players don't read it right. And that's that kind of USC is in that kind of, you know, offense that's too complex for the players to get it right, and not as difficult for teams to defend. That has to go away. That just, you can't have your quarterback, you know, where he can't even really read it and has to depend on players who are getting the calls wrong. And why are they still getting the calls wrong at this? You know, I didn't look like Arizona State got too many of their calls wrong.
No.
So, I mean, that's just, I think if you're, you know, if you're USC powers that be standing on the sidelines and watching what's going on, you see one team that really looks well prepared and one team that really didn't look well prepared. And I just think USC deserves a really good coach. You can't have the tradition and the history and the potential of a USC football program and not have a great coach. You have to have a great coach, and it just wasn't working out.
All right. Well, we talked about the game, and I know most people want to talk about the coaching stuff, and that's where a lot of the questions come in. So I'll try to go through these fairly quickly, Dan. We'll just get your thoughts on what's going on. We have a couple of voicemail questions and some email ones. But the first one, we had several people write in about, what did Pat Hayden say about being behind Lane Kiffin 100%? He put that video out on, I believe, July 25th. And then leading up to his firing, how did that go about?
Well, I agree with Pat. And he said the point is we're 100% behind the coaches until they're not our coaches. And I do think pretty much they gave Lane everything he wanted in terms of, you know, the ability to hire assistant coaches, in terms of, you know, backing him up, you know, in every interview, every chance they got. I thought they couldn't have been more supportive. And to be honest, you didn't hear any negative words around, you know, the team or the campus or the program or anything else. I mean, I've been places where the coach is on his way out and you really knew it. And everybody, you know, was talking about it. And that didn't happen at USC. The kids, you know, the players, the assistant coaches, I think we knew, for example, you had to not be happy if you were some of the assistant coaches. Never heard that, never saw it. You know, they were as loyal as you could possibly be. And I thought that came through in the press conference yesterday. But I thought that was the right approach, that they were 100% behind him until he's not, you know, not the coach anymore. And I thought that was correct. And, I think if, you can say he's not on the hot seat. And I thought it was interesting, you know, before the season, he's not on the hot seat. I think he should have been, but he wasn't. Should have been on the hot seat, you know, from, sun, you know, probably halftime at the Sun Bowl. But then I think, you know, Pat limited it to his comments were how from the Hawaii game on. He basically said, it was the lack of progress and the lack of consistency and the direction of the program in the five games starting with Hawaii. And I thought that was a fair way to go. He gave him, you know, he didn't go back to the Sun Bowl. He didn't go back to last year. He said this year just wasn't working, that they should have been better. They should have been going in a different direction than they were. And, you know, it came down to what was going on this year. So I think if you limit it to this year, I think they were kind of 100% behind him. I mean, they didn't force him to not call the plays. They didn't, you know, say, Lane, you can't be the offensive coordinator. They kind of let Lane be Lane. And this is what happened.
Yeah. we also have a bunch of questions about the coaching search and Aaron in Cincinnati. I figured I'd read that one for you. He basically wanted to know, how do you think the coaching search is going to work? Is there a firm, or how is that going to come down?
Well, they've used that, you know, personnel firm that got involved with Andy Enfield's search. Now, whether they'll, you know, follow that search in football or not, I think I would, just because it allows you to be hands off. You can say, we haven't contacted this guy, because they've got plenty of time early, as they did with Kevin O'Neill. They've got plenty of time here, and you really do want deniability. You want to be able to say, No, we haven't contacted your coach when that fan base gets a little nervous or whatever. And so I do like, you know, that idea of pre-qualifying guys, because I think they need to do a lot of pre-qualifying, because there are a lot of people maybe that it isn't worth wasting your time on, as they found out, I think, in basketball fairly early. And that allows you to maybe know a little bit better what you're dealing with yourself, because you don't want any, when it comes to the final, okay, now we got to, you know, hire somebody and we don't have any time to waste. You do not want at that point in time people turning you down. You want, you know, to really know this guy will take it. This guy, you know, and that has to start early, but you don't want Pat Hayden making those calls. So I think they'll do it that way. And, you know, whether they have, you know, a sense of we're not going to the NFL for all kinds of reasons, other than, you know, the guy's having a really good year in the NFL at whatever level, he's not going to be available for, and you don't know how long he's not going to be available. I mean, do you want to have a guy, you can't bring him in till signing day, you know? I'm not sure that's a starter. I'd be interested to know, and I don't think we're going to know, you know, because they may just out of courtesy say, you know, NFL guys are not, you know, not being considered. But it would be hard for me at this point to look seriously at an NFL guy. I mean, I think with Pete, he was like a non-guy at that point in terms of coaching. He had had all kinds of college jobs, and he'd had the two head coaching jobs in the NFL. But he was kind of a combo hybrid sort of a guy. You know, he'd been at, you know, all kinds of, you know, Arkansas and North Carolina State and Ohio State and, you know, a lot of different, you know, college jobs. So Pete clearly understood, you know, college football, and he wasn't attached at the time to an NFL team. So I think that kind of model, maybe, yes. Is there somebody out there like that? I can't think of one, but a guy who's functioning at a high level in the NFL right now, that would just seem to be a hard pull to get them in here in time and to do all the college stuff that's needed to be done at USC right now. So, you know, but I do think, though, I think the basketball coaching search gives you some idea of how they'll do it, and that was successful, and they really did a good job. They did their homework. I think they were pleased with how that went, that they got the most out of their efforts, that it was collegial, and that everybody at USC got involved in it, and everybody listened to everybody. I think Pat was pleased at how that worked, and so I'm looking forward. I think that's the way it's going to go. I don't think it's going to be a big let's find a USC guy deal. I mean, I think, you know, it's going to come down to, you look at a guy like, say, Chris Peterson at Boise State, and you say, is he the guy? Is he the right guy? And you qualify somebody like that, you know, and is he the right guy from his point of view and from USC's point of view? And you get, you know, three guys eventually maybe who are the guy. And then you really, you know, see which one is, you know, is it right? Is it the right time for him to take the USC job? My guess would be they don't even know how this is going to work until they start talking to people and getting feedback and, you know, having people react to being talked to.
Yeah.
And again, some of that is, you know, some of these guys are locked into some really significantly long-term contracts who you'd be interested in for sure. But, what's the buyout situation? And do you go with guys? Somebody, I think, made a good point on the P today. Do you go with a guy who's had, you know, one or so really bright moments, but that's also tied into one really bright quarterback, let's say? You could look at, you know, Texas A&M and to some extent, and Louisville to some extent, and say, gosh, what happens when that particular coach doesn't have that particular quarterback? Where does that leave us? And those are, you know, those are tough judgments.
Yeah.
I don't know where, you know, it's not easy. That's why they pay some people the big bucks. I mean, going forward, I don't think we know how do you evaluate, you know, the kind of people who are, you know, going to get tossed in the mix, whether they want to or not. How do you know how much of it is, I'm going to get locked into even a longer term contract at really big bucks if I talk to USC or my agent talks to USC. I can't have a better deal as far as I'm concerned. And that's where you need to really pre-qualify those guys and know if you're dealing with somebody who you want, who might come, or somebody who realizes, wow, this is a great way to get me up into the upper echelon of highly paid college football coaches.
All right, we got a few more I want to get to. I'll have to go through fairly quickly. But Chad in Riverside wants to know if do you think the Trojans are going to hire another assistant coach, probably someone on the defensive side, like a DB coach or a D-line coach?
I'd be surprised. I don't see that. I think there's so much involved in the USC job in terms of, first and second, biggest, most important media market in the world. For example, somebody, they always push the Alabama assistants, and you think, let me see, the guys who aren't allowed to talk to the media, aren't allowed to be interviewed, I heard one of them got a head coaching job, I think it was 2 years ago, and I won't name the school. I remember his first press conference, and he was basically inarticulate to the point of almost not being able to respond to a question. And that really matters in Los Angeles. I mean, when they put you up against the wall there at McKay Center, although who knows whether, the new guy will let you into practice or not, but based on the track record of most college coaches, maybe not. But you really better be able to handle yourself. And I think, one of the problems that Lane had was he knew he wasn't Pete Carroll. He didn't want to be Pete Carroll. And that was the right thing. He couldn't be Pete Carroll. But he tried to really not be Pete Carroll and to be himself. But some of the ways he was himself didn't work. And you do have to come across in ways. And there were ways he could be good with the media. He just wasn't all the time. And I think you really need somebody who can make the case for USC, for his players, and for himself better than Lane was able to do it. It just didn't come across in ways in which you need a USC coach to come across. And that's one of the hard things, I think, in picking an assistant who hasn't done that almost at all. I mean, just the fact that Andy Enfield had 2 years as a head coach. I mean, he had a great reputation as a recruiter and basketball mind. What he'd done as an instructor at the NBA level, what he'd done as a recruiter for Leonard Hamilton at Florida State, he had all of that going for him, and his own personality and his own persona. But he needed those 2 years as a head coach at Florida Gulf Coast, and he needed that NCAA run. So you really got a sense of who this guy is, how what's his makeup, how's he going to handle this kind of thing or that kind of thing. And I don't know that a coordinator, and there are plenty of examples of guys who gone from coordinator to, could Chip Kelly have done any better a job, in right. modern college football history than he did, coming out of University of New Hampshire 1 year and coordinator at Oregon, and then boom, changed college football. So it certainly happens. Can USC hope that they could do that? I think that's a longer shot than maybe you want to take.
You mentioned Nick Saban. Here's an interesting question. We'll go through this one quick for you.
Hey, guys. Andrew from San Diego. And I was just wondering, when they're making all these pre-lists about coaches being hired for the SC job, why don't they talk about Saban or Urban Meyer? I mean, we're SC. Why should we settle for up-and-coming guys? Can't we just go out and get the best? I know we have the pocketbook to do it. Thanks again. Love the podcast.
Hey, I think they're a dollar late in the day, or a day late and a dollar short or whatever for Urban Meyer. I do think Urban would have taken a look at it the last time. I really do. I think he's, you know, almost made it clear. And Urban, you know, wouldn't have been the easiest guy to deal with, you know, from our standpoint. But I think he would have he'd have been Urban. Now, whether you know that might work, didn't work at Gainesville. Ultimately, when you combine off the field with on the field, whether it's going to work in Columbus, Ohio. You know, cumulatively, at least he has his Gainesville experiences, his learning experience, you know, at Columbus. But, yeah, he could be, I don't think there's any question, he could be successful here at USC when you look at his track record and what he did at Utah. Just say, though, that, you know, this is, you know, this is USC. I think as good as USC's job is, it's probably hard to say that that you can take a coach away from Ohio State who's really doing well, and that's his home state. Probably hard to say that the guy's just going to drop Ohio State, and you know, especially he's just gone there, he'd get killed reputation-wise and every other way if he did that now. Nick Saban, you know, whether there's probably for him. The personal challenge of doing it again at Alabama is probably as strong as, you know, taking a move into a situation that he hasn't been before, a private university in the kind of a media market in town where maybe some of his controlling, the way he's able to control the entire program, it wouldn't be quite as possible. And who knows if he even would want, you know, the challenge of dealing with Los Angeles, for example, a whole different world. Now, you know, some guys say, wow, that'd be cool. But I think that might be more trouble than it, more effort than it's really worth. I think Texas could, you know, pre-qualify Nick, and he might say, you know, that's one more place. I could go there. I could see him saying that to himself a little bit more than see him saying that about USC. I think you'd have to have some kind of connection, some way of looking at USC that maybe we don't know about. Now, I think we knew Urban Meyer kind of had a sense of USC, and some of that is he coached at Utah. He's also kind of a Big Ten kind of a guy. But Nick Saban, you know, coached at Michigan State, but and just I don't see him as somebody that might have that kind of a connection to what USC football is all about. And you'd have to have that a little bit. And, I mean, Pete Carroll, because of his daughter playing volleyball here, his wife had, you know, was an athlete herself. And the fact that I think her father had been a USC guy. So the family kind of had a USC connection that Pete had made already before he got the job, and it made him really want the job. Obviously, he needed to get back into coaching. But absent that, I don't think you can, you know, come up with a guy like Urban Meyer, Nick Saban.
All right, let's one last voicemail question for you. Here you go, Dan.
Yeah, the first part of this is for Pat Hayden. I just want to thank him for finally doing it. I would have done it after the El Paso fiasco, but that's just me. In fairness to Lane Kiffin, he was in way over his head. He never should have had any of the jobs he's gotten. He doesn't have the seasoning. Number two, if I'm Pat Hayden, I'm flying back to Indianapolis today. I'm getting in Mark Emmert's office alone, and I'm saying, listen, if you don't pull it off right now, we're going to take you to a downtown L.A. jury. We're going to sue the crap out of you. We're going to take those emails from the Todd McCarrick in their case, and we're going to expose them totally. SC did nothing. SC did nothing. How does it help us that an agent wants to lure Reggie Bush away early and his parents take money? Hats off to Penn State. They should have never had it either. Jerry Sandusky should have been in jail, and that should have been the end of it. But the last part is to Ed Orgeron, good luck. I don't know what he can do with this season, but that Justin Davis kid, I'm seeing flashbacks of Anthony Davis and Clarence Davis. He's fantastic. He needs to get the ball more. And that's about it. Fight on.
Yeah, fight on, right on. I think, you know, you're on the money. I think I would sit down with Emmert with two things on the table. The emails and the correspondence, USC should be demanding, should have demanded that a year, you know, last November when it came out. It's your, you know, USC should have said, look, you use those to give us the biggest penalty in modern football history, undeservedly so. We went along with it, and now we found out that we got framed, we got railroaded. The only person who's looked at these from an impartial standpoint, Judge Schaller, said so. We need to see these before we know what we're going to do, what our next move is. And we're going to have a press conference here, and they're going to tell the whole world. And we're not leaving until we get a chance to see those. And then we're going to decide what we're going to do. And you don't dare keep those from us. That would be the first thing. The second thing, you would be demanding that the scholarships be returned because of the health dangers and the safety issues and all of the things that USC should have been spending the last 3 years building a case for. In this day and age, with the emphasis on limiting contact and all the concussion issues in college football, to ask a team to go to a game against Arizona State with 56 healthy originally recruited scholarship players is criminal. It's criminal. I mean, for example, the NCAA has no medical data, no safety studies saying that that's okay to do, that's the right thing to do, or even remotely justified as a way of giving penalties. It's not track. You can take a track scholarship away, and you're not going to get somebody killed unless he runs in front of a javelin. It's so different, and it's so wrong, and USC should not have put up with it. They should have started, July 11th or whenever, June 11th or whatever it was, the day after in 2010 when the penalties came down, to try to figure out how to get those scholarships restored. And it's way too late now, but you still got to start, and you got to get them back. And, it's got to be a two-track thing. But the NCAA is so exposed on that issue. They didn't consider one health-related issue in doing that, and to say that it's unintended consequences, they knew absolutely what was going to happen because they hit USC two ways. They gave them the limitation of 75, and then they gave them a 15 scholarship per year. They knew what they were doing, and they knew with the natural attrition, with guys leaving for the NFL, with guys getting hurt, with guys getting academic issues, and just the natural what happens in college. They knew USC was going to be way under the 75. I think USC ought to start by saying, we will have 75 at all times, and we're going to do whatever it takes to get to 75. However many we have to sign in February, however many, if we have to, whatever we have to do, we're going to have 75 at the very least, and then fight for the other 10. But and I think they need to get the Pac-12 to back them. They need unanimous support of the Pac-12 in that effort. And that has to be something that Pat Hayden, probably ought to be working on harder than coming up with the new coach.
Yeah. Makes sense, Dan. Good stuff. And I know we went a little long, but thanks very much for coming on the craziest week of USC football in quite a while. And really, that's saying something.
That's saying something. There have been a lot of crazy weeks. I mean, the non-crazy weeks are probably outnumbered by the crazy weeks, but it's never not interesting. That's the one thing and it was getting a little uninteresting. So now it's going to be interesting again.
Great.
We'll see. They still got a chance.
Yeah, they got a chance. 8 games left, so we'll see what happens for here.
And, with star wide receiver Buck Allen leading the way.
There you go.
I think as someone asked the coach 3 weeks ago, it was, what do you think about Buck Allen at wide receiver? Nah, I don't think we're going to go that route. Well, I think we might be going that route.
It could be. All right, well, thanks very much, and we will talk to you again soon. And everyone else, thank you very much for tuning into the Peristyle Podcast. We're going to come back, and we're going to try a Armchair Quarterback Podcast a little later on the week, so stay tuned for that, and thanks again for tuning in.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.